Broadcasted live. Catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za. Point of view.
Legal matters. All right, it's a Wednesday and Tabi Singh Dumasane is here. As you know, free consultation. Folks, legal advice is expensive, huh? Legal advice is very expensive. So it's here for you this evening until 10 o'clock, 086-000-00959. You can also send a voice note. And listen, you can be anonymous if you like. Some issues I know are quite sensitive. You're more than welcome to send an anonymous voice note, 063-688-0959. Just make sure you give us all the details. Okay, so Tabi Singh has got an update on a topic we have been speaking about for a long, long time. And that's of customary marriages.
Yes.
Okay, there is an update.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, as we know, customary marriages, registered or not, doesn't matter. It's a valid marriage. Mm-hmm. Everything is fine. Mm. So now there has been a gazetted notice wherein the Minister of Home Affairs saying from the 1st of October until August of 2026, I think it's the 1st of August of 2026, parties are now...
From when? The 1st of
October. 1st of October, mm-hmm. 2024 to 1st of October,
2026.
1st of August 2026. Mm-hmm. There's a green light there for you to go and register. So it says...
You must register your customary marriage.
Actually, it's 1st of September. My apologies. Mm-hmm. So 1 September 2024 to the 31st of August 2026 as the date in which a customary marriage may be registered.
What does that mean?
It ends there. This thing is 8 pages long, but that's where it ends. So okay. We were hoping that with that being said...
Could it mean that, based on what we've discussed before, yeah, that automatically if you have been lobolad or whatever, married customarily, you are automatically married civilly, right? That's what we've been saying all along.
In communal property, basically, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
But now, them saying, come and register your marriage, it may mean it could change that. Or sometimes, as things do happen legally, there will be people who will have to then go to court and air this out, and then we'll get more clarity.
Most likely, yeah. I don't see any other way because they would have to first change the act itself.
Mm.
Right now, just had a gazette saying, guys, we know we have many of you who haven't registered your marriages. So we are giving you a window period. Actually, you have a period of 3 months to register your marriage after it's done. So if you don't do it, then, you know, it's still recognized. It doesn't really matter whether it's registered or not. It will be recognized as a valid marriage. So now the question is, with this gazette, it doesn't change the act. All it's saying
this
is that...
This is what I'm thinking. That
yeah.
If it doesn't, I guess it gives people grounds then to contest certain things. Should a matter come to you now? Should a matter come to you or after the
first
the August 2026,
yeah,
should a matter arise where the couple, you know, obviously are not on the same page about what it means, mm, having not registered the customary marriage, maybe the courts would then have to help us with that understanding.
Yeah, because remember the act, per this, the act doesn't change. It remains the
this
same.
Is it, because it's a May thing.
Yeah.
If you like, if you don't like...
But I think it may lead to a situation where the court is saying, but you were given so much time to go and register your marriage, especially...
The question then is, what are the... In other words, if you haven't, then what?
What
does it mean?
What would be the consequences?
Yeah.
So we were hoping that when I actually got the gazette and I went through and it says 8 pages, I'm like, okay, maybe we'll get an answer. And then that's where it stops. It's literally on page 4. That's where it ends. It's that small and a paragraph that says you have up until this date to this date. But I thought that it was quite interesting and maybe important for us to maybe inform people that this is what's now happening. What if they could be used as a defense at some stage?
This is what I'm thinking. Yeah.
Because now, remember, there was also a case earlier this year wherein a marriage was concluded customarily,
mm-hmm,
and then they then later signed an antenuptial contract.
Mm-hmm.
Come divorce time, the attorneys for the husband were arguing that the ANC is stronger or valid versus the customary marriage. Mm. And then the judge, good friend of mine, the judge then said, no, the law says customary marriage, if it was concluded before the ANC, that's the valid marriage. Anything that comes after the customary marriage, that is invalid. So a lot of there was an amicus curiae on that matter, which included, I think it was the Pretoria Tennis Association and two others, who were saying that it makes no sense that customary marriages should be recognized in the manner that which civil marriages are.
Yes.
And then part of the things that were cited by the judge were that it benefits Black women who have always been at the lower end of all things relating to law, and especially in marital issues. It delves into the racial aspects of marriages, because if you're going to say that customary marriages are not going to be recognized at all, or should be compared to civil marriages, which are basically white marriages, then are we saying that such marriages are invalid? And also with this gazette, as we've discussed, I think, numerous times, the gazette is free, it's everywhere, but not everybody knows that a gazette is going to come out, and then people need to comment on it and say stuff about it. The law is not easily accessible. Mm. If Kaya FM, for example, was somewhere, and it could be heard, somebody would know what to do. Mm. But then also now Kaya is being dealt with in Sehoa instead of Sizulu, Sesotho. Mm. So people really don't know. Mm. So what about those who don't get this information that we have now? Are we then saying if their marriages don't get registered, will they now be dealt a bad blow? Mm. Are we going back to 2004, the Bear case, when women were not allowed to benefit from their husband's deceased estate because they were married customarily? Mm. You know, all of these things are going to come out as a result. So if it says, if there were consequences that were attached to this, we'd probably having a different conversation. But it also still leaves that question. What happens if people do not register their marriages by the 31st of August 2026?
What does it mean in actual terms?
Yeah.
So this is an interesting one, a new case law on forfeiture of assets.
Yeah. So this one, woman married very young. Mm-hmm. She married a 17-year-old, a man who was 17 years younger than her.
She was older than him.
Yes. Okay. So they married in 2018, I believe. Mm-hmm. And then they moved to Namibia. Mm-hmm. And when they got to Namibia, the woman left her job so they can start this business venture together. And then she paid to the husband some of 1 million, and then they left Namibia, came back to South Africa to now continue their lives here and become the couple that they wanted to become. Things go sour, as they usually do, luckily enough.
Hey, I love the sidebar.
So they are now back in South Africa. Things go sour. And luckily enough, there are no kids born of the marriage. So it's just between the two parties. Now, she had sold her house in Namibia for 4 million and some odd in terms of Namibian money, currency. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then 2 million of that was then put into the husband's account for them to use for whatever. Now that things are sour, she then moved out of the marital home, and then she applied for divorce. The marriage lasted 2 years and 9 months, to be specific.
Marital home here in South Africa.
Mm-hmm. It was worth 2 million and some change as well. So she now applied for a divorce, and then in her particulars of claim, she says, listen, he must forfeit everything because the house is because of me, the renovations are because of me, everything is because of
me. And the little money I had stashed there in his account.
Yeah. So he then counterclaims and says, well, I agree with the divorce, but what I'm disagreeing with is that I must forfeit. In actual fact, you should forfeit, because you're the one who brought the assets in here, into the marriage, and therefore I am entitled to them. I didn't ask you to bring these things here, basically.
Yeah, man.
So now the court has to listen to all of this.
You know, I know that you are generally quite fair with these gender issues. Mm. Is the sensitivity that it's a man who is saying, no, we were always in this together, because generally had it been the other way around, it would have been maybe straightforward.
Most of the time. Mm. Yeah, most of the time. It would have been a situation, but you're a guy.
And also we were married in, were they married
they
in
were.
Community
property? They were. They
so
were.
Automatically it would make sense. Yes. You must divide everything. Mm-hmm. And she, what's her view on this thing?
Her view was, no, you're not entitled. I renovated the house. I bought the house actually, and then I renovated the house, and then I gave you money, and then I bought you cars, and then she listed all these things. Therefore, and the marriage didn't last long enough for you to say you've got a vested interest, or that if you were to forfeit, you are going to suffer in any manner or form. And then he countered and says, no, we've always been in this together. So it doesn't matter that the marriage was 2 years, 9 months, sisalang, these things are now ours. Let everything be divided down the middle.
What's the magic marriage contract say?
There was none. It was just in a community of property. So the contract literally says divide down the middle. Assets, liabilities.
So does she have a case at all?
The court viewed it differently. Mm-hmm. But also there's another thing, that money that she gave to him, mm-hmm. the investment money, she had access to the account, mm-hmm. but she didn't have control over. So in other words, SMS notifications or whatever, if money comes in or out, she would have that notification. So when the divorce proceedings started, she made an application in the high court to say, can there be... They had an undertaking between them that no one's going to touch that account until the divorce proceedings are done. Did not the guy take the money? Took it, spent it, and then she had to make an urgent application to say not only should the account...
No, I agree with her.
Yeah.
There, I agree with her, because what would have probably happened is that even that money would have been split.
Correct.
But now he just chowed all.
He just chowed everything.
We'll see.
Yeah. And then the urgent application was to freeze the account and then have money returned.
Yes.
And then he was only able to return 600,000.
Ujilepel.
So when he was asked under cross-exam, because it was a full-blown trial, when he was asked under cross-examination, Kanti, what happened to the balance of the money? No, I was frustrated.
Oh, yeah, Nana.
Yeah, no. And wow. The thing is, I thought I was chowing my half of the money because we haven't been together in any event.
But he went way overboard.
Yeah. So now the court, in analyzing various case law, that, like, for example, the time mm-hmm. that the marriage lasted contributes significantly to whether a party should forfeit or not. Mm-hmm. The contributions that are made to the marriage and the assets contribute to whether a party should forfeit or not. And then the most important thing is that you cannot ask as the party. I just forgot the case that this particular court cited. Mm. It says, if you are bringing something into the marriage... Mm, mm. You cannot ask for Pimelo to forfeit what you have brought into the marriage, because it is brought by you. It's for Pimelo to say that you should forfeit what you brought into the marriage, not the other way around. So basically the bulk of the assets were brought by the wife. Mm-hmm. And then you can't forfeit what is already yours in the first place. That's mm-hmm. what the court is saying. So the long and short of it.
So hold on.
Yeah.
So who cannot forfeit? The man or the woman? In this case.
It would be the woman.
She cannot forfeit
what she...
She brought.
Yeah. Mm. So she's...
Because his application was that she must just forfeit it.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
Yeah. Mm. So now the court looked at everything, listened to the evidence and all of that, and said, when it comes to the investment money, yeah, my guy pay back the money. In its entirety, with interest.
Where is he going to get it from?
I don't know. I mean, he's able to pay an attorney and counsel, because that's what it was in
from
the high
her
court.
Money.
Yeah. You know? So pay back the money with interest, and then the 600,000 that was in the attorney's trust account be paid over to her. And then the balance of the estate was divided.
Oh, shame.
But there was an adjustment in her favor, but it's not going to be a big adjustment. The bottom line is that the joint estate was exactly that. It was
a joint estate.
Yeah. So it's always
so in a nutshell, you can't say me and Mudibedi again. We were married for 3 months.
Yeah.
So he doesn't have the right to share with me. Because 3 months or 6 months or 3 years.
Yeah.
If it's a joint estate, it's a joint estate.
Yes.
Even if is there such a thing as annulling a marriage here?
Yes.
What's the time frame?
So an annulment is if it was concluded on something that didn't exist. So in other words, Nale Mudibedi were already married customarily.
Mm-hmm.
And then we part ways thinking, you know, and then you and he marry civilly.
Yeah.
That is an annulment. That's grounds for annulment. It is based on something.
Who would annul?
This marriage can be annulled. Either okay. one of you can apply
because,
for annulment.
Because I discover that you are there.
Correct.
Oh.
Right? So in that way.
He doesn't tell me Unale Musadi Kuhai.
Yeah.
And then I discover that Unale Musadi Kuhai.
Yeah.
Those are the grounds for me to annul this marriage.
It's one of the grounds.
Does it matter how long? So in other words, if I only find this out, what, maybe 3-4 years later?
It is still based on an irregular or non-existent.
He lied. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So, but he and I.
For instance, I don't know. He lied that he had other children.
Mm. You know?
Lauda.
Eh.
Mm. So
he's like no.
He's got children everywhere, and I was under the impression he has no children.
Yeah,
and married on those bases.
Yes,
I can go and say no. I don't want this thing.
Or he married you and you're under the age of 18 and you never told him, for example.
Yes.
You know, you did not have consent from your parents to get married. Stuff like that. Those are grounds for annulling a marriage.
Are there grey areas on yes. those grounds?
Yeah.
Because I imagine someone maybe saying, well, where did she think I was going every December? Oh. You know.
It was obvious.
Kidneki patala maintenance every month. What did she think I was doing?
Yeah.
Why did she think this child keeps visiting? I mean, wasn't it obvious?
Yeah. Yeah. There's always grounds for questioning. The reason for the annulment. So yeah. Everybody, there is a way to try and challenge that. To say that, that is not sufficient ground for annulment. Go and apply for a proper divorce. Because with an annulment, there's no need to divide an estate.
I see. Because basically, legally, an annulment makes things simpler and easier. And it's just, let's pretend we didn't have this thing.
Yes, yes.
We don't have to dismantle anything.
Mm-hmm.
Let's just pretend we don't know each other. And I on to it.
Yes. Unlike going for a divorce, now we are now nitpicking everything. So keep whatever was yours, because clearly we never really existed. It's just a downside if kids were born, because now it's another ball game.
How easy is it to annul if there are children within this marriage?
I'm yet to see a case that deals with annulment where a child has or children are now involved. I haven't seen one, but I would assume that with that situation.
Yes, if he's been lying and he has two families, right?
Mm.
And we have children and there's another family somewhere else with their children. I'm sure those are grounds.
Yeah, there are grounds, but then he still has the obligation to take care of his kids.
I see.
Mm.
Because annulment would in a way interfere.
Annulment only deals with the unity of the two parties. It has nothing to do with the children. Yeah. So the question will now then be.
But wait, Ntabise. In a way, if annulment deals with just the two adults, ne? We've spoken before about spousal maintenance.
Yeah.
If it's an annulment, it then means the marriage didn't happen.
Yes.
Meaning you would also forfeit the spousal.
Yes.
That's tricky.
Yes.
That's very tricky.
So then if it's a situation.
Then you wouldn't want an annulment.
No.
Because you would still lose out on what would have been your benefit of being married to him.
Yeah. But with that being said, if Mudibedi was already married to me and he never told you, if you do find out or when you do find out 10 years later,
And enza maintain.
And enza maintain. You can't claim spousal maintenance.
That's what I'm saying.
But you can claim maintenance.
Yeah.
Just maintenance. Because you
is it in terms of how you quantify it, is there a distinct difference?
So what you
spousal want, and just maintenance.
Yeah, so spousal is automatic within a marriage. Mm. So you don't have to apply for it. It's automatic. As soon as you're married, I have the obligation to maintain you. You have the obligation to maintain me. Mm. As soon as you part ways, that obligation is severed. Mm. So now the question is, are we going to continue to maintain each other for a certain amount of time and whatnot? But if it so happens that Thabisile Modibedi are still married, but Phemelo finds out that Modibedi has been married, mm. automatically that assumed right, yeah, spousal maintenance is gone because it never technically existed.
But I can claim maintenance.
Correct.
Because, well, anyway, he was maintaining.
Yes. Correct.
Except that he can't claim maintenance.
No.
Because I'm the one asking for an annulment.
Yeah. So you just stay, and because he was the one maintaining, you're going to get your child into the account and all of those things. You can prove that he was maintaining me by X amount.
Can he claim, even if he has wronged me, can he claim maintenance?
Yes.
If I have been maintaining him?
Yeah, he can.
Yo. I love it. So it's possible for someone who's wronged you, that you were maintaining, right, to claim maintenance.
Correct.
Not spousal maintenance.
Correct.
But maintenance, even if unali busy with another family.
Correct.
But can say, yeah, I used your money to maintain the
yes.
other people.
Yes. Correct.
So it's sure. He can say, unona na chelete kisaga. The money that I was maintaining him with.
Yeah.
And I've decided, because he's a liar, I want the marriage annulled. Mm. And he can still say, good, but you must continue maintaining me.
That's correct.
Because the other family lived on your money.
Yes, definitely.
I need a break for this one. Let's take a quick break.
Good evening, we have a situation here, noise pollution in our area that's affecting Banawa school, affecting Batwagerekan, affecting the elderly. Noise pollution ya thing is chaotic in terms of arowali, especially weekends. Radio la from 2 p.m. up until 4 a.m. We tried to speak to the owner, Amameli. We tried to involve the cops, Abayezi Nix. We tried to approach as well to new Metro Police, Leona, has failed. Now the question is, how legally, Rika, to Swajwan Kapa, where can we be referred to retold a solution to this statement? Thank you.
It's a bylaw problem, eh?
Indeed,
it's a bylaw problem.
Yeah.
Folks, send in your questions 086-000-0959, WhatsApp notes on 063-688-0959. If the police in the city themselves are not exercising their right to deal with this matter using bylaws, what then?
They can take it to court. So we go to the match court, make an application wherein you are interdicting them from making any noise. Remember, the bylaws allow them to do whatever up until 10 p.m. After 10 p.m., it is not permissible for somebody to make the kind of noise that sounds like is the situation here. So you will put...
So just for the process, I get it, the police did not react.
Yeah.
So, you know, you don't need a case number because they're not going to give you a case number because they don't think your matter is serious.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So you just approach a court, you make an application and interdicting them from doing what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And then, an interdict, there's two forms of interdicts. There's an interim and a final interdict. It's very difficult for a court to grant a final interdict on the first application. So you would get an interim interdict pending whatever, right? So part A of the application, you'll get your rule nisi that says that you are being prevented from doing X, Y, and Z pending something else, or maybe the city intervening, or maybe the police, whatever it is that needs to be done. And then once that part B has been dealt with, you come back to court and confirm the rule nisi. In other words, make the interdict final. So once you have that final interdict and they continue, now you have a piece of paper that allows you to now call the police and say they are making a noise, and then they're going against a court order, they can be arrested.
But Agri, I think his problem with other police.
But then I keep on saying that without any court order that is available, it's just Bandra says that they're like, but with a court order that exists there and they don't arrest, you can hold the police accountable, Lebon.
And their job would be to make sure that the tavern or whatever this place is.
Yeah. So abides by the order.
If it fails, if the cops do not act.
Yeah. Then you approach the court for a contempt of court order. And with that contempt of court order, it becomes an arrest. You go with it to the police station. They are arresting because it's a contempt of court. That's a criminal offense. They have to arrest.
So from a community point of view, how would they do it? Is it who's representing these people? Would it be one person who would be? Do they need people to corroborate the problem?
Yeah.
Or... yeah, nah, you know, could someone say, no, we won, Ramoras is Ali won, everybody else is not complaining?
It would be easier if...
No one here complains. Everybody's happy, we're all happy. Can that be a defense?
It can be, yes, definitely, 100%. So it will be easier to have first applicant all the way to applicant number 50,
and they can say,
Papa,
will I care how what we are doing here? Let's not disturb one another. And they can say, Harmu disturbi, askar disturbi.
Yeah, I actually had a case, maybe three, four years ago, where in these neighbors in Bryanston, where Babulelani the counter charge
for the dogs that were making a noise.
Emong was saying you're encroaching on my land. Emong was saying your bowling area makes noise for me. So it was a protection order or harassment order against
Uchada.
Yeah. And they were both granted their orders, so that if you feel like you're being...
You can call the police on the other one, and you can call the police on the other one.
Yeah.
If the noise is as a result of, let's say, something like an animal, and, you know, how am I going to speak to Snoopy to keep it down? Or so, better yet, I have a cock that crows, and a mukuku o.
Every morning at dawn.
And it has a thing, a tendency in the middle of the day. And it's annoying to the neighbors. And by the way, you are allowed to keep things like chickens.
Yeah.
I think I think under 4 or 10, I don't know, in the suburbs. So that's not against the law. But I am fed up because I do not live in a farm. I am in a suburb. And a mutukio, le mukukwa hai, ola tang timing, who just decides, horiena anytime, it can just crawl.
Yeah, so that is an application I've also... Well, I didn't deal with it, but I heard it while I was sitting.
I interview saying, Gladi won.
No, I'm not. It was in Nigel, and this was a real, real complaint.
Hi guys, so balala la mkuku.
Balala la mkuku.
Hey, naka krakuji. Ay, na tu krakomo pizza. And what was the issue?
exactly what you're saying. He was crowing at all times. My dogs get irritated by your rooster, and then they bark all night.
And then
Baitlisa caught in the protection order.
And then
he was given a protection order, but now the question is, how do you enforce it? Do you go and
grill him protection? Oh, the neighbor.
Hey, Alanka Mukoko, because when Mukoko does the noise, when the Mukoko does the noise, her dogs react.
Oh, shame.
Wow, bon. Mm. And then it's just
it triggered it.
Yeah,
and so
I don't know how they implemented that. I don't know, but they got their protection order. But then, like you said, how are you going to speak Mukoko to say stop making noise?
Oh, gee.
Once.
I mean, isn't that the most obvious resolution to the no, so that we don't have a problem? Okay, let's take a voice note.
Good evening. I'm just making a follow-up on the subject that you're discussing about noise. Suppose you've got a neighbor who makes noise during the day. Are they protected by the law up to 10 p.m.? They can make as much noise as they want, and then after 10 p.m. it becomes a bylaw that says, no, you can't make that type of noise. Or there is a way of saying, hold on to it, reduce your volume or something like that.
That is very interesting.
That is very correct, actually.
Because I had a neighbor who, and for legitimate reasons, for very legitimate reasons, and you know, during that COVID period, people were all working at home, right?
Yeah.
Who was a teacher and was teaching, I don't know, grade ones, grade zeros, whatever.
Yeah.
And you know how a preschool teacher says,
yeah,
1 + 1.
Shit, man.
Primary school teacher, well, you know, that level of teaching. Aina, yahorra
mbuwa.
1 + 1 = 2. 2 + 2. That's how she used to teach.
Shame.
But I mean, it's legitimate. She was a teaching.
Yeah.
But it's the whole morning. 3 + 3 = 6. The whole morning.
Yeah.
So, I mean, what rights do we have? Because, yeah, I mean, she's working. It's not a bad thing. What she's doing is a good thing. But that means when I howl in your own Zoom meeting, 1 + 1 is 2.
Yeah.
2 + 2 = 4. That's it.
I'm actually trying to check if by any chance the law has changed.
You know, people think I'm joking, and it's not a lie. But it's don't think so. And to be fair, also, she sent out notices to say,
this is what's going to happen.
Between 8 and 12, do please excuse me. I'm teaching. I'm an online teacher. And we just have to... But it got quite rowdy.
Yeah. Mm. So it seems that municipalities must focus on the decibels produced. It's not even no longer about the times anymore, right? So you need to focus on the decibels produced rather than the time when the noise occurred. Municipal bylaws are based primarily on disturbing noise, which is objective and is defined as a scientifically measurable noise level, which is compared to the existing ambient noise level. So I don't know how you're going to tell a Metro Police officer that
decibels,
the noise is above 7 decibels. So the myth, so they call it, is that between 10 and midnight, it doesn't apply. It's a decibel situation. It's not about the time frame.
So the gentleman that sent a voice note, you do have grounds to complain about noise even during the day.
Mm-hmm.
If this noise is unbearable during day, you can complain.
Yes.
You can complain. You don't have to wait for 10 o'clock.
No, you don't.
Okay. There's another voice note.
Where I'm staying, there are people just drive the cars and stop in the street, just make noise and stuff. When you try to confront them and they tell you that this place belongs to Umasipala, which is a municipality, how do we deal with those ones in terms of the law?
So now that's very interesting. That's a public road. In residential areas, in suburbs, in private spaces, this is where it applies more strictly. On a public road, you can't really tell anybody what it is they can and cannot do.
I've actually had a case. I've seen a case where the issue are people in a suburb who live next to a school whose primary complaint is one thing. The guys that do the drop-offs and pickups of the learners, blaring their music and sometimes staying waiting for the kids because they don't want to leave. It's inconvenient, right? But while they come in and out in a suburb, it's them who are blaring the music. Your take on how what that would mean? Because I suppose it's not a public road in this. It's a public road, yes, but it's, you know what I mean.
It's a public road. It's a public road. Whether it's boomed off or not, that's the thing. I think there's also a misconception that because we've boomed off, it's no longer a public road. As long as the municipality hasn't assigned this road to a specific individual, a specific group.
In fact, it wasn't just the neighbors. Even the school had a complaint. We actually dealt with that at some point. The school that says we have tried everything just to tell the taxi drivers that bring the kids to keep it down. They just look the other way and they couldn't be bothered.
So here they say a controlled area means a piece of land designated by a local authority where in the case of road transport, here we are, road transport noise in the vicinity of a road. The reading on an integrity impulse and sound level meter taken outdoors at the end of a period extending from 6 to midnight while such meter is operation. You see, it goes back to the decibels and all of those things. How are you going to then determine what decibel it was? So
And who should determine that, by the way?
There's actually...
is it the traffic department, as in JMPD?
Yeah.
Oh my word.
They have a calculation of what the decibel should be.
So this case, it would be JMPD.
It would be.
That must come and tell the taxi driver easy.
Yes.
Not the police.
Yeah. Yeah. So there's a formula clearly on how to deal with or detect this decibel level.
But I mean, the grounds would, I suppose, in this case be the kids are learning.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, disturbing the peace or disturbing noise, like they call it, which is a noise level which exceeds the zone sound level, or if no zone sound level has been designated, a noise level which exceeds the ambient sound level at the same measuring point by 7 decibels or more.
In a case where, let's say it's a church, and you appreciate it's a church and it's during the day.
Yeah.
But man, this church.
Skupusate.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So in that situation, from what the Act is saying is that we're dealing only with decibels. So the determination is who's going to be going there and listen and see and calculate the decibel level to see if it has exceeded what is... The general font or whatever, which is 7 decibels. So I don't know if the police are equipped with that information or that those utensils to go and measure said information, but that is what the X is. It must not be above 7 decibels.
Let's take a quick break and Tabi Seng will be back, and I see you in Dada Selby. I'll take you when I come back. 086-000-00959. You can send a voice note as well if you like on 063-688-0959. We take all your legal questions, and Tabi Seng Dubazana is here. And Tata Selby, good evening and welcome.
Good evening, Pamela and Tabi Seng. How are you?
We're good. How are you?
How are you?
I'm blessed beyond measure. Yes. Tabi Seng, we can't get
away. Hey, and Tata Selby.
Na, sorry, next door, kaki kereke. Opposite, limo kidi sangomi.
Yeah, ba compete.
Ba compete. Okay, kereke yona ke utlwisisa gore nka kgona go bua le bone mara difango ma tlo jetsa gore it's uncontrollable
o mo moyeng o tla
moyeng
o mo moyeng o tla moetsa
o tla moetsa
o mo moyeng wa interviewer instead
e gore o tla jetsa le tswa at any time
yeah.
Ona nako.
Yeah.
Yes. So ha ona re o tla re no re tla schedule di drums ka tsatsi lena kana ko iso.
Ona schedule.
Yeah, ona schedule. If ke go bela o dula na le mathwasana. Anytime is tea time.
Anytime is tea time. Ya no ke ntse nka etsa ntlwane o ntabise.
How that is it? Go ena o batla go ba tswarisa.
What's another ring mode this will be? I'm reading one about the use of measuring instruments. But the person who's going to check the noise levels in the drum, they must place a microphone of an integrity pulse sound level meter at least 1.2 meters, but not more than 1.4 meters above the ground. But check your now. The decibel levels na di drug, and if it exceeds the decibel levels, then this person can be charged, and the abaka fine a fine not exceeding 20,000 or imprisonment not exceeding 2 years. So puto korena ba tobarona ba JMPD by SAPS, do they have these instruments to assist you? That is all. Kima buthata ba LinkedIn wabo.
And I don't believe for never na litson.
I know all the best in the but I think can I the earplugs win? That's all you need to do.
Best solution.
I can get the earplugs because it's Obama tata.
Yeah.
To prove that noise pollution is going to be a problem.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Ntabi saying you mentioned the fact that some of these things the best or the worst they can do is to do what? To ask you to stop, and usually that's it.
Yeah, that's what usually happens, because I mean, if they don't have the instruments to try and implement all of these things, they're just going to shout at you and leave. But the law says they're entitled to have you arrested and detained. You may face a fine of up to 20,000 rand or 2 years imprisonment.
Okay.
But the issue is, how then do you test what level the noise was at per what the act says? So that was always going to be a defense. And if anything, most of the time when you are being stopped by, let's say, JMPD, and then they say you exceeded a certain speed limit, the first thing that you always challenge is the machine. If it was calibrated, when was it done? Is it been serviced regularly? All of those things. So if they do have the utensils, are the utensils up to date? Are they serviced? Are they going to capture the correct things?
Someone is responding to that. Toolsa is saying that JMPD wouldn't have the tools to measure the decibels.
Yeah.
With the help of environmental department, ask them to measure noise levels. Oh, okay. So Department of Environment.
Yeah. Could assist.
Environmental affairs. Interesting. Okay, here's a new question. And this question is from Ntabi Singh. Ntabi Singh is asking about, okay, it's a squabble in a body corporate. The issue is the levy. And the issue is that they don't agree on the service provider that has been suggested, number one. And number two, not everybody agrees on the need to do painting in this complex?
So usually the in the body corporate, there has to be a vote and there has to be a resolution in the AGM. So if the resolution that was given was that the majority of the people say that there's no need to paint, then that resolution must be adopted by the body corporate. The few members, even if they are trustees, they cannot override the majority of the people in there, because if the majority had already voiced their opinion on that and they're overriding them without any just cause, they can challenge that in court in actual fact to say, we never agreed to this. The AGM minutes say X, Y, and Z. And the downside, yeah, the body corporate, is that nobody actually keeps minutes. People think it's just a situation where people who live in one area are going to have a squabble and or a discussion, and then they kind of leave it there. The secretary doesn't take minutes. There's no accountability. The body corporate has to every year have a report back to its members, Horena, what has been happening. Of the things that were agreed in the AGM last year, how many have been accomplished? The accounting has to be reported to the body corporate. There's a lot of things that the body corporate has an obligation to do, which they don't do. So if this should be the start for that particular body corporate to adhere to the laws, let it start now. Because if they do that without the rest of the members agreeing to, they can challenge it in court.
Okay. Tulsa has made a point, and I think it's an interesting point. We touched on it a bit, but I'm not sure how the mechanics work. I was saying to you earlier that these are bylaw issues, right? In other words, issues that are dealt with by the city. He's making the point that the police wouldn't enforce the bylaws. SAPS would not enforce the bylaws. It would be the Metro Police, which are the JMPD in our case, that are empowered to enforce bylaws. So does that mean when you make the phone call, you'd be calling the JMPD?
Yeah, it would be
not the, best
the
way. Police.
Yes.
This is probably why the police hardly do much.
Anything about it. So rather call the Metro Police.
I haven't seen the Metro Cops come to your house.
No, I've only seen the SAPS come to the house.
The first respondents. I haven't seen the Metro Police come to a house of someone who's complaining about the neighbors.
No. But generally, let's find out.
Generally. And I don't think you're wrong, because the bylaws are supposed to be enforced by the city. Yeah. But I'm just curious about how the mechanics would work, who I would be calling.
I'm sure there's a line just like our 10111 for SAPS that you can call there. I personally haven't had to experience it, or even in a court situation. So I wouldn't have the exact details on how it would be done.
Blanco has asked a question here about an issue that they have with someone that does not have the money. So it seems like there was an accident, a car accident, and the person that bumped into him did not have insurance.
Okay.
And does not have the money. What then?
How much was the cost of the damage? If the damage is not exceeding 20,000 rand, take it to the small claims court. If the damage is exceeding 20,000 rand, go in to an attorney, but draft a summons, a simple summons, wherein you detail what has happened, and then you're lodging a claim. Make sure you attach exhibits is the accident report. You attach the information of the person, if you have it, when the accident happened, and you take pictures of the accident. You attach the accident pictures there as well to show that negligence on the part of the defendant. And then remember, all you need to prove is 1% negligence on the other part. You don't really have to prove the full 100%. If you can prove 1%, you're good. So with that, you serve them. And then they have the opportunity to reply to the summons. If they choose not to reply, you get a default judgment. That default judgment, you can use it to go and attach property. If they don't pay it, you can go and have it served to the sheriff and execute and have property attached to pay the debt that you have.
This is an interesting one. Wendy is asking about a matter between herself and a private school. I think it's really interesting. We are now at the end of the year. I am owing my child school fees.
Yeah.
and they are not allowing my child to write her exams, final exams, because I have not paid school fees. In this case, since it's a private school, would I have the rights, or my child's rights, have to be protected to continue writing exams until I can find a new school?
Yes, and it's a very difficult one, but Section 28 of the Constitution, every child has a right to education, right? These are all children's rights. With that being said, the contract is between yourself and the school. If the T's and C's in the contract that you signed say that failure to pay will include X, Y, and Z, you may not have grounds to fight for your child to write the final exams. Go and check your contract that you signed. If the contract does say that, you most likely won't have grounds to have your child write the final exams. But if there's no mention of what the consequence is with regard to the child for your failure to pay the school fees, then they cannot deny your child the right to write the final exams, because they'll be violating her constitutional right.
So does it have to stipulate, you know, in detail?
Yes.
That the child, as a result of your non-payment, we are going to do 1, 2, 3.
Yes.
If the contract says we will have to take further steps,
that's not sufficient, because further steps is further steps against me, because the contract is between me and
you. Oh, we reserve the right to take further steps.
It will still be against me, not against the child, because you don't have a contract with the child. You have a contract with me as the adult. So your actions, any further steps, any further legal anything should be against me, not against the child. So if you can just check what her contract says, if it says nothing about the child, they have no legal standing to deny your child the right to write the exams, but they do have the right to withhold the results
until. But that still infringes on the child's right, because if the results are what's required to go to the next school,
that's correct. What they do say is that they write the letter to confirm the child passed or the child failed. We will release the results once the fees have been settled. They can't now prohibit strictly and say, we're not going to give you anything. It's the same as higher education, universities. Mm. If you're going to work or you're going to whatever and you still haven't paid your fees, they give out a letter that confirms you are done, you've completed, but they're not going to give you a transcript or whatever until you have settled their fees.
Let me go to Tsepo in North Riding. Hello, Tsepo. Tsepo, hi. Hello, Tsepo. Oh, Tsepo.
I'm here.
Hi, how are you?
Good, and you?
Good, good. Welcome.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Tsepo.
In my car, I was to get repaired. They needed to replace the battery. And then they damaged the glass and the back of it so it doesn't close. Now, I did a quote for repair, which was 7,000 rand. Now, the people who had attempted to replace the bridge saying that they're not liable for the cost and they don't take liability for any damage that may have happened due to them trying to replace my bridge. How binding is that?
I missed the first part of your story. I'm so sorry. Can you repeat that?
Just maybe repeat that. The line wasn't good, Tsepo, just from the beginning. Tsepo?
Hello?
We can hear you. Just repeat the story from the beginning. We had lost you there in the beginning.
I can't hear anything.
You can't hear anything. I suspect from what I could gather.
Yeah.
From what I could gather, he's saying that, you know how you take in your car? And while they were trying to fix X, they damaged Y.
Okay.
But you know, there's always a disclaimer. We are not going to be liable for any other damage caused on your vehicle. He's asking how valid that is.
So that one has been challenged quite a few times and a few people have won. So it depends, as always, how they have phrased their contract. Because if you're going to take your vehicle in, you're entering into a contract.
Let's hear. He's back. Tsepo, are you able to hear us now?
Yeah, I can hear you guys.
Excellent.
So, yeah.
Go ahead. Repeat the story.
Yeah, I took in my watch to get the battery repaired.
It's a watch. Okay.
Yeah, it's a watch. Mm-hmm. So while they were trying to replace the battery, they damaged the glass. They completely cracked the glass and the back of it.
Yeah.
I then took it in for a quotation to see how much it would be to repair it.
Mm-hmm.
It was 7,000 rand. Now, the owner of the shop that I initially took the watch into said that he can only offer me 1,000 rand.
Yeah.
And that's a sign of goodwill.
Yeah.
So now I left the watch with them. What recourse do I have? Because they say that they're not really liable for any damage that may occur.
No, Basang, take them to the small claims court. You have all the right to take it there, because the manner in which a battery is replaced, you are going to affect certain things. So you have to be cautious in how you deal with something like that. So even if on their door they are saying that they will not be held liable for whatever, the manner in the job that they're supposed to be doing entails them having to touch or handle certain parts of that particular battery, which includes the face of it, which is where the glass was. So yes. Yeah. Take them to the small claims court and claim back your money.
Did you say it was 7,000 rand? Eh?
Yeah.
For the damage.
Yeah, it's under 20,000.
Yeah, so take it.
You know, maybe, Tepo, you probably need three quotes.
Yes.
Not just one. Eh?
Yeah.
Yeah. What I mean is when you take the matter to the small claims court, you need three quotes. So that you can take them as rather than one, so that the court can see that those are valid and so on.
Okay, I'll do that.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Tepo. You? Can you imagine? So ordinarily, this idea, you're saying it's been to court many times.
Yeah, it has been. There are situations whereby you take in your car to go fix something and then the engine now is kaput.
Something, the thing that you did not take it in for.
Yes, yeah, so how
has
did
now
it happen?
Been damaged.
And then they're going to tell you no.
We have a notice at the front that says we are not liable for any theft, any damage caused in whatever, while the goods are in our premises.
That has been challenged successfully in court. So challenge it.
And for things, you know, drastic like theft.
Yeah.
If the goods were ceded to a particular property and whether there was a robbery or whoever, whether it is an internal job, there was theft of your own good. What then?
So the beauty of the term possession is interchangeable. So if I give you this item right now, I'm not saying it's yours, you are now in possession of it. You now have
control
of it. You're
the custodian of its safety.
So if it gets stolen from you, if you had no other manner of protecting it, liability of course will fall away from you. But if I'm going to take my car to you in a place that is gated and then there's supposed to be, so it's valuable things that are there, you're supposed to ensure the protection of those items. You cannot say that I am now raising my hands, I can't do anything about it. You can be held liable for that. Putting a sign at the front of the gate is not sufficient anymore.
If a piece of property, let's say it's a car, is in your possession, and the damage is, let's say, hailstorm, something that's out of the person's control, is it your responsibility, the owner of the vehicle, to claim for that hailstorm damage, or the owner of the garage or the facility where it was?
So if it's something like nature, that like you're explaining, then it will be the obligation of the owner of the vehicle to
claim. I get it. The more you claim, the more it affects your profile.
Yeah. Yeah.
If maybe it was in my position, maybe I would have protected the car better.
But would you have foreseen it? You would not. It's something that you could not have foreseen that your car would get damaged, and as a result, you would have to take it there, and as a result, it got hit by a hailstorm.
So I must claim.
You must claim.
Not the person where my property was held.
No. No.
You see now.
Yes, keys.
Okay. Thanks, Ntabi Singh. Where do people find you?
So they can people can send me an email on info@dubazanaattorneys.co.za, or they can send me a WhatsApp on 0796547523. Alternatively, they can call our office on 0872658010. Our offices are in Randburg on 272 Oak Avenue, ground floor, office G2.
All right. Thanks, everybody. I'll be back tomorrow at 8.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.